From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Well, intuition has actually been something that has been almost like a pressing observance for quite some time. When I was studying classically at the University of Missouri Columbia, I noticed that, I never heard them really teach or talk very much about women composers. And I think the seed was planted then that, like, something's really missing here, because on a conservatory level, you're looking at, like, an international perspective of artistic input by people all over the world. And I'm like, where are the women? What was it that they had to say that would be expressed through their work, through their artistry? And it just seemed to be a void there. So here we are now, years later. And I believe, based on where we are in this country and what's going on in society and politically and even artistically, I felt like right now people are ready to hear what women have to say in a new and profound way. And intuition is that project that celebrates and champions women composers.
Alicia Olatuja, vocalist, composer, and arranger. Olatuja is a once-in-a-lifetime singer. When you hear her sing, you won't soon forget. She has taken being a vocalist to a whole new level. She's able to combine many genres, including classical, jazz, blues, and R&B. In her latest project, Intuition, Songs from the Minds of Women, she takes us on a dazzling journey through time, tempo, genre, language, and culture from some of the most respected women artists of our generation. This vocalist has made sure to select songs that represent a variety of themes, perspectives, and ages, as well as geographical areas, emphasizing the power of diversity. Many of the songs began with either a cappella or a single instrument arrangement for the first few bars. Intuition is a carefully crafted statement of female empowerment at a pivotal moment in our cultural history. I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Intuition, Songs from the Minds of Women with Alicia Olatuja, In Black America.
Something that people heard, because when you're a little kid, you're just playing around, just having a good time. And for me, I was just playing around, you know, chasing around some poor little kid in my kindergarten class singing "I'm Saving All My Love for You" by Whitney Houston. I had no idea. Oh, I scared him, poor thing. And I didn't know any better, but my teacher, Mrs. Marge, she was my music teacher in kindergarten. She pulled me aside. She said, "Alicia, come here. I want to talk to you. I'm going to tell you something. I don't want you to ever forget it." And I was like, "Okay." She said, "One day you're going to have an incredible voice and an incredible music career. And I want you to remember, don't get the big head."
By now, you should have heard about Alicia Olatuja. She's the lead female vocalist that performed the Battle Hymn of the Republic at President Barack Obama's second term inauguration. Born in Washington State, the family moved to Oregon when she was very young and then to St. Louis when she was 5. While growing up, she was immersed in a wide range of musical styles, including classical, jazz, gospel, blues, and soul. Like many of her contemporaries, she sharpened her talent in the sanctuary. Though she had planned a career in veterinary medicine while attending the University of Missouri-Columbia, her music interest led to her being cast as the lead in the operetta commemorating the bicentennial of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Olatunji has a master's degree in classical voice opera from the Manhattan School of Music. Her current project, Intuition, celebrates the music of female composers from around the world, including herself. Recently in Black America spoke with her, returning from the European leg of her worldwide tour.
Oh, well, we are touring Intuition, my latest album, Intuition Songs from the Minds of Women, and we started in Japan, and then we headed on down to, we went back to New York, and then I just came back from the European leg of the tour, so we were in Rotterdam, London, Paris, and we finished off in Greece, Athens.
And how many people are on the tour with you?
Well, it depends. When we started in Japan, it was a different band, mm-hmm. and then when we went back through New York, I was able to pick up my amazing background singers. But usually we do a quartet. That's usually what we do when we're traveling, you know, super far internationally.
Do you take any of the musicians with you, or do you pick up some along the way?
Well, for the Japan leg, when we were in Japan and in the East, mm-hmm. I had one particular band. And then when I was in Europe, I used a UK band full of really, really amazing musicians, one of them being Robert Mitchell, and he's like a treasure there. And Asaf Sirkis and Kevin Glasgow. And then now that I'm back on the West Coast, mm-hmm. doing the West Coast leg of the gig in L.A. and Washington, I'll be with Josh Nelson, Christian Newman on drums, and the amazing Benjamin Shepherd on bass. So we've worked together before, and it's always a party. It's always a great time. So I'm really glad to be back on the home turf of America.
I know, that's right. How did you come to the point to record Intuition?
Well, Intuition has actually been something that has been almost like a pressing observance for quite some time. When I was studying classically at the University of Missouri Columbia, I noticed that you know, I never heard them really teach or talk very much about women composers. And I think the seed was planted then that, like, something's really missing here. Because on a conservatory level, you're looking at, like, an international, perspective of artistic input by people all over the world. And I'm like, where are the women? What was it that they had to say that would be expressed through their work, through their artistry? And it just seemed to be a void there. So here we are now, years later, and I believe based on where we are in this country and what's going on in society and politically and even artistically, I felt like right now people are ready to hear what women have to say in a new and profound way. And Intuition is that project that celebrates and champions women composers. And from people that we already know of, that are, you know, renowned composers such as Joni Mitchell and Tracy Chapman, to even newer artists, ones that are still in school now or maybe graduated, or even myself. So this has been a long time coming. And I think right now, I think people are really ready for Intuition.
Was it difficult for you to make a decision on who was going to be a part of this project, song-wise?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was difficult, because the thing is, when you unearth treasures, you want to mm-hmm. keep them all. So, it's like, oh, I think I'll take the rubies and I'll leave the pearls. It's like, no, it doesn't. It's really hard. It's really hard to do that. But what helped me be a bit more selective was I really wanted Intuition to paint a picture of all the various experiences, like a rainbow of experiences that women do have. And although it doesn't cover all of them, of course, it definitely covers issues of love and passion and surrender that we're more familiar with tunes that like Sade composes, for instance, mm-hmm. which you'll hear on Intuition. But also I wanted to touch on some issues that may be a bit uncomfortable, that have been difficult for us to talk about, but once set to music, maybe provide a different platform to express those taboo subjects like abuse and mistreatment and beauty ideals. So you'll hear that with Joni Mitchell's Cherokee Louise. You know, we talk about the abuse of a young girl who's run away from home to escape her predatory stepfather. And, you know, you'll hear songs talking about how the beautiful dark-skinned child is struggling seeing her own self-beauty and self-worth based on what she sees as beauty standards in society through Child of the Moon, which is a composition that we will also be doing by a local artist here, actually, Natalia Phillips. So I'm super excited about tonight.
We'll be back with more in Black America after this message. Now on with our conversation. Tell us about the inspiration you received from your mom and your grandmother.
Well, yeah, I come from a matriarch family. So it was me, my sister, my mother, and my grandmother, all of us in one house. And so I had strong women and women who were showing me how to navigate through such a system, a patriarchal system at that. And also just being, as a Black woman, you know, what that means. And my mother was always the type of person that never gave up. Like, my mother has, like, this indispensable resource. And she always pushes forward, and she's actually a brilliant educator. And so she always made sure that education was a huge part of how we fed our intellect. And my grandmother, she was a young girl when she had her three children, when she was married, and then she decided, you know, I really want to go to school. I want to get my college degree. And she went to school and obtained multiple master's degrees while having three children and raising them and in a very difficult time, as we know, and dealing with racism and a higher degree of sexism than what I've experienced in my life. So I think my grandmother and my mother definitely helped me remember the shoulders that I stand on and grasp at the opportunities that are given me without shying away from them or being afraid to go for the things that I desire and my heart's desire, and to know that my voice is valid. It matters. That's been a big, big impact that my grandmother and my mother have made on me growing up.
When did you understand or realize you had this tremendous talent?
Well, I knew that there was something that people heard. Because when you're a little kid, you're just playing around, just having a good time. And for me, I was just playing around, you know, chasing around some poor little kid in my kindergarten class singing, "I'm Saving All My Love for You" by Whitney Houston. I had no idea.
You scared him to death.
I was just having, I scared him. Poor thing. And, you know, I didn't know any better. But my teacher, Mrs. Marge, she was my music teacher in kindergarten. She pulled me aside. She said, "Alicia, come here. I want to talk to you. I want to tell you something. I don't want you to ever forget it." And I was like, "Okay." She said, "One day you're going to have an incredible voice and an incredible music career. And I want you to remember, don't get the big head." And I didn't know what she was talking about. But I definitely remember that was the first time that someone had basically validated me as a young child and also encouraged me and kind of put that almost like knighting, you know, of the queen. You know, it kind of gives you this, it acknowledges something that they see in you, and you begin to say, "Oh, really? Oh, okay." And it kind of gives you that moment of that light bulb going off and being like, "Oh, maybe there is something special about me or what I have to give to the world. Maybe something that I should really take, you know, into consideration," even as a young girl.
On your way to becoming a veterinarian, you decided to become a professional singer.
Well, yes, I've always loved animals. I still do. And I went to school originally for veterinary medicine, but I was a minor in music. And I thought, you know, okay, well, just I'll keep my eye on this music thing. You know, because the truth of the matter is, you can grow up around people like I did, where pursuing a music career, even amongst people who have music careers, it can be a very terrifying venture. It could be a very difficult venture. And nobody in my neighborhood had pursued it, or anybody in my family even had pursued it as a full-time lifestyle type thing. And so when you run that by members of your family, they're like, yeah. You know, you get all those sounds and ums and errors. And so you're just like, okay, let me try something that, you know, you feel could be a bit more secure in your pursuit. But then I was in the music building and I heard a girl singing on one of the recital hall stages. And I was just so overcome. I just thought to myself, you know, I can do that. I want to do that. And I'm going to give it a shot. 2 years, because I was always told that you can, you know, the first 2 years kind of mess up. And it's okay, because you're just doing your gen ed, you're not, you know, really specializing in anything yet. And I said, okay, I'll give myself 2 years doing the music thing, and if nothing pops off, then I'll go back to my veterinary plans. And in those 2 years, so many amazing opportunities opened up that pretty much paved the road from Missouri, where I was going to school, all the way to New York City, where I ended up moving.
What led you to take your talent to that next level of obtaining a master's in classical voice and opera?
Well, I always loved singing gospel, R&B, soul, blues. But I noticed that a lot of my friends who were also incredibly talented, they were starting to experience vocal trauma and things like calluses and polyps and nodes on the vocal cords. And that could be really heartbreaking, discouraging for anybody, especially if you're a young singer and you're just trying to figure things out, you know? And so I thought to myself, you know, I don't really want that to be my story. Let me figure out a way in which I can explore my instrument, learning some techniques and things that I can use so I can have a better shot at getting all the sounds and colors of my voice out that I want to get out without hurting myself. So I actually pursued classical music as a means of exploring my voice so that I could do and choose what I wanted to do with it and explore it without experiencing that heartbreaking damages that I had seen amongst many of my friends.
This urge is killing me. I've got to open up and be this performer must transform her. This
sees you perform on stage, it's amazing, particularly from my vantage point. How are you able to just navigate between all these different genres of music without even thinking about it?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I think it's kind of like when you're telling a story. Like if you're telling a story, you're not necessarily thinking about, okay, this is the happy part of the story, so this is where I will smile and my voice will be lilted and high, and then now we're getting to like the dark part of the story, and so I'm going to make my voice get really dark and go into character about this, you know, menacing individual. It's like whenever we're telling a story, our voices travel through all the different feelings and characters and all those things to communicate to whoever we're talking to, you know, and so it's the same thing I feel when I'm performing. I'm taking you on a journey. I'm telling you a story, and we're going on this story and this journey together. And so I'm moving in and out of pretty much how to just express this story in a way that makes sense, in a way that's applicable to whatever the style is, in a way that's applicable to whatever the topic is, and just surrendering yourself over to being vulnerable enough to connect with the person that you're singing or speaking with or communicating with, kind of brings about a level of ease because you're not getting in your own way. You know, you're so invested in telling this story and in the characterization that that's just what you're going to do. You're just going to communicate.
When you have an opportunity to talk to young people, obviously with your plethora of styles and genre in which you sing from, what do you tell them about this business?
Ooh. Well, it depends on the question. I will say that because, you know, a lot of them, you know, and if some of them are people who have had full careers in something else. And they're like, you know what? I've done that. I've made good money. I've saved. I'm ready to try something else. And I've always wanted to try music. They're going to get a totally different conversation than somebody who's saying, you know, I've always, I, you know, I want to be a singer, but I don't know. Or, you know, I'm just, what school I go to? Like, so it's definitely very different what I tell people. But I suppose the through line advice that I give people is you have to be patient with your craft, mm-hmm. and you have to pursue it, and you have to pursue whatever it is you want to do, but you have to pursue it with a high degree of endurance and passion. And it's almost like pepping yourself up for a race. You know, you can't decide halfway through the race, oh, now I'm going to, you know, get prepared for the next leg of this race. It's like, no, you have to prepare as best and as much as possible before you step foot on that track. You don't just think you have to prepare yourself for what you already have. If you have a dream or a goal to perform on a big stage, mm-hmm. then it really doesn't matter if you've been called to do that performance or not. It doesn't matter if it's in the books. Prepare for it so that when it comes, you'll be ready. And I really do feel like when you prepare yourself for the life you want, that's the life you get.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about performing at President Barack Obama's inauguration.
Well, that's a perfect example and segue in for that piece of advice. You know, I feel like for me, I was told that I was going to sing for the second inauguration of President Barack Obama 10 days before
10
the performance.
Days. Okay.
10 days. And so I was like, okay, I have 10 days to freak out, compose myself, uh-huh. practice, and then do this thing. And one of the comforts that I had to prepare myself for it was that I was already ready,
mm-hmm.
because I had been preparing myself for an opportunity to sing and give and pour out what I had absorbed through the years of training and working and concerts and all that. I was ready for it. It was a moment that I could step into, and I knew that I could do it because I'd never treated any stage that I was on as if it was anything less than the inaugural stage. But when I did it, it was so surreal. It was just millions of people, just a sea of people, basically. And I could look over from mm-hmm. the steps of the Capitol where our seats were, and I could see all the presidents that are mm-hmm. alive. And you know, I saw Bush, I saw Clinton, and I saw Barack Obama, as well as, all, you know, their families. And it was just insane, the amount of history that was present in one place. And I felt so honored to be a part of that history that it overwhelmed any fear I had and even the cold that I felt in my toes. So.
Was the phone start ringing off the wall after that?
Oh, yeah. It was going crazy for a while. It really did. It really was. And you know, it was great because it kind of let me see that when you decide to step forward and tackle a Goliath mm-hmm. of a performance opportunity, that it makes a difference and that people see it and people are inspired by it. And, you know, I hope people, when they see that video years from now, including myself, if I'm ever feeling mm-hmm. uninspired, that will once again rekindle that flame of inspiration and that you can do it. You know, you could tackle situations and dreams that you want. Sometimes they could be scary.
I heard
but,
that.
You know, so you can't, but you can't hide from the dreams that you want, even if they may intimidate you. You tackle them and you execute them, and then you reap the rewards of being triumphant.
I understand. Alicia, a couple more questions. I understand you sing in different languages?
I do. When I was studying classical music, with a classical degree, you have to study French, German, Italian, and in various dialects of English, just as a part of the degree. And I was always attracted to foreign languages because I love how it seems to open people up. It's like a key, you know, you can communicate yet on another plane. Even though music, I feel, transcends language, when you sing in someone's language, or when you paint a song in a language, it really does change the landscape of that music. So in my music, you'll definitely hear with Intuition, Songs for the Minds of Women, I wanted to highlight compositions of women from all over the world, not just American. So, you know, you have artists that are composers from Australia, you have composers from Chile, and one of them being Chilean composer Violeta Parra. She's a beautiful, she was a beautiful composer and an amazing, just brilliant genius of a woman. And I perform her anthem, Gracias a la Vida, which is such a beautiful and powerful piece, and also a very heart-kept treasure for many of individuals from South America and throughout the world.
How do you go about making a decision to perform with other artists and on their albums or other concerts?
Well, a lot of times I'm just asked, you know, somebody contacts me and says, hey, you want to work together? I'm like, yeah, because I love collaborating with people. I love the magic that happens when two artists with all of their years and decades of experiences, they come together, and it's like being in the kitchen and baking something or creating something. I like to cook too, by the way. And someone brings, you know, some spices or different types of ingredients that you never have had access to. The magic that you can create is always going to be unique and special, and something that you are not going to create on your own. So I usually grasp at the opportunities to work with any musicians, but luckily for me, I've been able to be asked and invited by artists and composers and musicians that I already have admired for quite some time, like Billy Childs and Gregory Porter and Dr. Lonnie Smith. And and it's just been really powerful. And it has changed me as a person, watching them work, working with them, and creating music with them. It's just been, it changes you. It changes you as an artist, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that.
I gave you all the love I could. I gave you more than I could give.
Alicia Olatuja, vocalist, composer, and arranger. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712.
Falling.
This has been a production of KUT Radio.